You're listening to Lather Talk with your hosts, John Shea and Gerard Gustilo.
Well, Gerard, my lovely co-host, is running late. So let's talk about guitars, since he doesn't give a crap about guitars.
Let's do it.
So you have, I first learned in our own, you know, side conversations that you like effects pedals, which is a rabbit hole I've shared a little bit about. But you also have a like guitar collection as well.
I do, yeah. So before the whole wet shaving hobby,
yeah,
my life was guitars. So I would, was a maniac. I was a total maniac. I would run around Craigslist and Facebook and antique shops and flea markets, garage sales, just trying to find, you know, really nice vintage guitar stuff.
Yeah.
And I was pretty successful. I did it for like 10 years, extremely aggressively.
Okay.
And so yeah, a lot of times I'd have to fix them up. I kind of became like an amateur luthier, amateur guitar tech, guitar amp tech. Just
really?
Fixing up all the junk that I would find. I shouldn't call it junk because some of it was pretty valuable.
Yeah.
But, you know, I did pretty well like finding stuff in random places.
Okay.
And so it kind of became my life, vintage guitars, boutique guitars, amps, pedals. It was kind of a crazy time. And so I'd fix that stuff up. I would sell it. I would trade it. I'd buy more stuff. I'd keep the things that really I bonded with and fell in love with and moved the other stuff I didn't. So, that was, you know, basically like from 2006 to 2016-ish, 2017-ish. And then the guitar stuff kind of took backseat to brush making. And to be honest, I haven't been really into the guitar stuff the last few years just because I don't have time mostly. But
right. Okay. Wow. So the guitar hobby took you right up to the point of changing to shaving brushes. All right. Wow. I didn't realize it was such a long period. So like just knowing a little bit about like the guitar tech stuff. So you mentioned kind of like you kind of became kind of an amateur luthier. How about like the electronics and stuff, like your soldering and for both amps and guitars? Like, did you already have some knowledge on that area?
Okay. I really didn't have much knowledge in that area. I learned it on the fly. Like, oh, here's this really cool guitar I found at a garage sale and electronics don't work. You know, obviously I didn't want to take that to a luthier and I wanted to learn how to do it myself. So, I could continue to repair stuff as I found it.
So, okay. Oh, kudos to you that you kind of, learned it inside and out.
No, a very good hobby to, and I'd like to get back into it at some point. It's just my life these days is my day job, which takes, you know, probably close to a solid 10 hours out of my day. And then I come home, spend time with my kids and do the family thing. And then I'm out in the shop for an hour or two every night making shaving brushes. And there's like literally no other time for any other hobby whatsoever.
Right. I was like, well, whatever free time you have is basically given to Trotter Handcrafts, right?
It is. It's my side hobby, my only, you know, thing outside of work and family these days. So
okay. Just to pick your brain a little bit more on the before we move on from the guitar stuff, how many guitars are in your collection? And is there a favorite of the bunch?
You know, at the peak, I think there was 40 or 50 guitars in the collection and at least 40 or 50 amps.
Wow.
I scaled that back. So now I think I'm more in the 20 or 30 range for guitars and amps. So
okay.
Feels a little more manageable yet still excessive. But those were like the cool ones I found. I just could not part with. I had to keep them because how it is. They say a guitar, when guitar picks you, sometimes you don't pick the guitar.
Absolutely.
There was just some that just had a little extra mojo or you know, worked for me better than others. So
that kind of, I guess, leads me to like favorite bands, musicians, or genres of music for you.
Oh yeah. So I was in high school in the mid '90s during like, you know, the grunge era. So Soundgarden, Smashing Pumpkins, Stone Temple Pilots, Alice in Chains, that's kind of where I gravitate to.
Okay. Nice. Yeah.
But you know, I like modern stuff too, and you know, I like a fair bit of variety.
Okay, but kind of like home base is like that the 90s,
yeah,
grunge era.
It is, yeah, that's where I gravitate to. So if you ever watch any of my Instagram reels, you'll probably see a lot of that stuff in there.
Oh, okay, you're connecting the pieces now. That is funny. I wonder if we were to like dive in deeper with like people who regularly post on Instagram what music they choose. I think it would reveal a lot. So yeah, okay,
it does. Right. It does. Yeah. And I will say it, you know, on my now we're talking about brushes and Instagram, but on the reels, it increasingly becomes difficult for me to find songs that I either haven't used on a reel or work with the brush, if that makes sense, and the video itself. Yeah. So
like would you say like when you're working on a particular brush, pour, etc.
Yeah.
Is there a song like do you do that? Like, does your brain like, oh, you know, this combination of blue, gray, and orange, I'm thinking of, you know, like a Foo Fighters song or you know, whatever.
Yeah, no, I think that's accurate. Yeah, it a lot of times I'll pick a song based on the name of the pour, if that makes sense.
Oh, sure.
So yeah, like
that makes sense.
You know, I've got a pour called Bone. So it kind of looks like bone. It's kind of an ivory white with a little bit of yellow and ivory in there. And so, of course, when I do the Instagram reel, I got to use like Alice in Chains, them Bones, or, you know.
Yeah.
There's, and Google's been my friend, too. Sometimes I'll have to Google like, okay, what song has this word in the title? Because that matches up with the name of the brush, right? So.
Yeah. See, yeah. People, this is the insight that you don't have. Unless you're hearing a podcast with Paul Trotter and how he chooses his background music for his reels.
I'm embarrassed to admit that sometimes I spend an excessive amount of time trying to find the right song for an Instagram reel.
I feel that pain. I don't know how many viewers and listeners feel that pain, but I feel that pain. So you're in good company.
There's been, and I'm not gonna lie, there's been a few times where I've thought to myself, my God, I've spent more time trying to find the right song than I actually did making this brush.
Yes.
Oh, and that's when I really feel like a loser.
I thought you were going to say more time than you spent like editing the reel before you even added the music.
No, there's been some that probably about, you know, they're right up there with the actual brush making.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. Well, there's a fun little behind the scenes. Like, did you know?
I can't believe I just admitted that to the internet. Yeah.
You heard it here first, folks. Well, you know what, like to the silver lining, or maybe like glass half full way to look at it is you're very intentional. I think you're very intentional about how, you know, everything that goes into your brush making. Why would it not extend to the reels, which might be a throwaway thing, but for you really is a powerful, you know, it's social media, guys, is a powerful marketing tool that's free for
it
small businesses.
Is.
And you absolutely. And you're, you know what I mean? I think you're getting the most out of it because
that
right song, right? It means someone's sticking around like 10 seconds longer and then maybe like, hey, I do like that brush. Maybe I should make a purchase from this guy.
Maybe so. Yeah. Right? You know, I'm sure it can't hurt, you know?
Yeah. So all that's to say, no shame in however long it takes you to find the right song for the reel.
Yeah, no, it definitely, the social media side of it with Instagram, it's an amazing tool. Like you said, it's this free tool that we as brush makers or artisans or whatever you want to call us have access to. We can make this little production with our phone. We can upload it and potentially reach thousands of people, you know, right away. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's a incredible marketing tool for small businesses, for craft people, you know? So
yeah,
by all means, I've been utilizing it for a few years now and it's worked well.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think you're definitely very adept with it. So keep it up.
Plan to.
Yeah.
Hey guys, we'll get right back to the episode in just a minute, but I want to take this chance to say thank you to all the Lather Talk patrons out there. I want to let you know that I greatly appreciate your financial support of this podcast and the YouTube channel. We're helping take care of costs that happen behind the scenes. Thank you so much. If you guys are in a position and want to help out the podcast, please check out our Patreon page, www.patreon.com/lathertalk. And one last way you can help is share your viewing or listening experience, post up on social media, and we are happy to reshare your post. Thank you guys so much for tuning in, and now back to the episode.
I'll definitely be asking you about Busch Light.
I expected that. Yeah.
That what there are multiple people when I ask for listener questions, like, oh, you gotta mention that. Like, okay, all right.
I should have never told them I like Busch Light.
It's okay. It's we speak about it as a, you know, endearingly to with you connected.
The things you get attached to in this life.
Yeah, I think it's more just in light of kind of like where you're located and what other options.
There's some really good options.
You know,
there are 17 award-winning, outstanding microbreweries within a stone's throw of my neighborhood.
Really? Oh, okay.
Yes.
Wow. But the heart wants what the heart wants.
And it wasn't always that way either. It was... just something in recent years. I think maybe I'm slowing down. I'm in my mid-40s and I can't really just drink IPAs like I used to be able to drink IPAs, you know?
Okay. So there are reasons for this.
There is.
Busch Light. Okay.
There is. I can enjoy a few Busch Lights and still function and not get tired.
Yeah.
I don't know if the same can be said about double IPAs for me. You know what I mean? If I go to one of the microbreweries and I have a few double IPAs or even regular IPAs, it's going to be like an Uber ride home and nap time at 6 p.m.
Nappy time.
Yeah. So I guess I got old a little bit. I don't know, but I do enjoy drinking beer, and Busch Light fills that void for me.
Well, you know what? To your credit, like in a social setting, especially, right? It's like you want to enjoy a drink, and I assume it's less filling. It's less filling compared to the whichever IPA. But then also, I mean, kind of what you're speaking to is the alcohol, the content, right? It's just
the IPAs hit me pretty hard, and I'm not able to function like I used to be able to function.
Okay, all right. I guess we got to that question a lot earlier than I thought, but I respect that.
We can revisit it.
Okay, I will. or we got it out of the way, and then we don't have to go back, because I don't know.
That's fair.
That's fair.
You can use it if you want to. Feel free to use it.
Yeah. Now, if I didn't include it, people would be like, what the hell? You didn't ask him the one thing we wanted to know.
We want to know about the Busch Light and why he loves it.
I know. So that came up where was within our social circles. Did that come up at the Idaho meetup?
Is that it probably came up before that. It probably came up on the Discord. Somebody, you know, sometimes we turn our cameras on the Discord, and somebody probably saw me like working in the shop on the lathe. Busch Light in the background, and instantly started making fun of me.
Mm.
And then they're like, "You drink Busch Light?" Why, yes, I do. And then it just kind of became a joke. I'm pretty sure it started at the Discord, and then it escalated.
Okay.
And then, of course, we went to Idaho for the meetup. And of course, right away they all started talking about Busch Light. Oh, we got to find this man some Busch Light. So Carlos took me to a grocery store at like 10 o'clock at night or something. We were the only ones in there. Well, first he Googled it, like, where in Idaho Falls can you buy Busch Light? And
he finds I assume anywhere, but okay. Maybe not
in Idaho Falls, but anyway, he found a spot on his phone. We took a ride. We got there. We bought some Busch Light. he bought things to make breakfast for everybody the next day. Oh. So yeah, here I am with some Busch Light. He's like buying bacon and eggs. And yeah, that was
all that together actually sounds pretty good.
It was good.
That's a good time.
It was a good time. Yeah. No, Idaho was a lot of fun. It was a lot of laughs, a lot of fun. So yeah.
Was that your first shave meetup?
No.
I asked you mid drink, but
I went to a shave meetup like in 2015, I want to say it was 2016 in Seattle.
Oh, okay.
There was, I think it was organized by some guys on the Shave Nook forum.
And, oh, really? Okay. All right. Oh, cool.
Yeah. So we all met up at an Irish pub in Seattle, I remember. And there was a pretty good turnout. I want to say at least 50 people showed up. And yeah, that was my first meetup. And I was fairly new into the hobby at the time too. So I was just like, oh my God, there's people who like meet up and talk about this stuff. And
yeah, yeah.
And of course, there's a piff table and there's giveaways. And yeah, it was kind of crazy to meet up with those guys. And
that's a good size meetup, I would say. 50 is kind of like a...
Yeah.
Potentially you can kind of make your rounds if you wanted to.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, it was cool. Right. Yeah, that was my first meetup. And last two summers ago, I guess it would be now, we had a very small informal meetup here in Western Washington in Bellingham, where I live. And so a couple guys from like the Seattle area, just Washington folks, kind of met up and we all hung out for just a couple hours. It was very informal. Again, it was at a pub and talked shaving gear, had a burger, had a couple pints, and yeah, we called it a day. So that was probably like, you know, I don't even know if you want to call that a big formal meetup, but it was just a get together. Yeah.
A get together. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. It's been great. So I'd like to go to this upcoming meetup at Maggard's. I guess it's April, right?
Yes.
So are you going to be attending that?
As of right now, I won't be able to because it's happening during both my wife and kids' school vacation. And we have some tentative plans. So unfortunately, it conflicts with the, it's like on the tail end of that school break. So yeah, a little bummed I won't be able to make it.
Okay.
Last year was a great time. But the good thing is it happening in April and not June. It won't be super duper hot and oppressive.
I heard the last one was a little warm in that building, so
yeah, that's a bit of an understatement. Yeah, well, let me do a little bit of a late intro here, but viewers and listeners, welcome to Lather Talk episode number 70. With me is my co-host Gerard. Hey Gerard, glad you can make it.
What's going on, everyone?
Guys, we actually have Gerard for a bonus episode. I think when we were recording the award show, we thought that was his last one. He really wanted to be here for today's guest, and we're so glad to have him. Also very excited that he's having his second child within the next few weeks. So hoping that goes smoothly. But speaking of our guest, guys, we have on the show for you today, he is the award-winning brush maker, Paul Trotter of Trotter Handcrafts. Paul, welcome to Lather Talk. So glad to have you.
Well, thank you, guys. It's great to be here.
And just in case you're not familiar with him, you're going to learn more about Trotter Handcrafts and how Paul got into the world of brush making. But in the meantime, please be sure to follow him over on Instagram at Trotter Handcrafts. And of course, you can visit his website, see all the beautiful brushes he has for sale and has sold in the past at trotterhandcrafts.com. So Paul, we've already been talking, so thanks for putting up with that awkward intro midway conversation, but
no worries.
We'll fix it in post.
We don't need to fix it in post. We're gonna roll with it because that's what other podcasts do. They have this cold open and it's like, we just gotta roll with it because
yeah, you know, that's what it should be. Should be informal, yeah. And yeah.
Yeah.
Cool hangout.
Yeah. Just a bunch of dudes talking about shaving and other things.
Nothing abnormal. Nothing unusual.
No, it seems seems totally normal. Yeah, let's go with that.
Nothing weird about that. All joking aside, though, Paul, I'd love for you to share with us, how did you get started with Trotter Handcrafts. How'd you get into making shaving brushes?
Good question.
Thank you.
I started in the hobby back in 2013.
Okay.
And yeah, I kind of got into it just kind of in a fluke manner anyway, just a hobby. Like I was telling John earlier, I was really into guitars and that was my life, collecting guitars and working on guitars. And I was just hanging out in one of the guitar forums, and one of the threads in the guitar forum in the section called the pub was about safety razors and wet shaving. And so I saw that link and I thought, oh, this is cool. I didn't know people still did this. It looked interesting to me. And coincidentally, at the same time, my old electric razor kicked the bucket. So I thought, instead of buying a new electric razor, I'm gonna go buy a DE razor and give this a shot, just see how it is. So I jumped on Amazon. I bought the Edward Jagger DE89, like many of us do. Mm-hmm. Back at the time, it was like $26 or something. It's pretty easy to get into. Bought a tub of Prasso and a little cheap boar brush, and that was my setup for like at least a year or more. And that was how I got into wet shaving. Obviously you start with a very modest kit and then you find the forums like I did. And then it was all sort of downhill from there. And I started like, oh, I got to try that soap base. I got to try this razor. I think brushes were, oddly enough, like the last piece of it that I really got into and went hard at. Mm. So, I actually used my cheap boar brush for a handful of years. And then I bought like a used Thayer 3-band brush off one of the forums in the buy sell mm-hmm. trade section. And then I was like, wow, okay, so this is way better than my cheap $10 boar brush. And so, yeah, then the brush thing kind of started to bite me a little bit. And I started trying a lot of different brushes. And I guess this was about 2018 or so. And I got really into the 2-band, like the nice 2-band knots. I started mm-hmm. chasing nice artisan handles and things like that. And yeah, it got rather expensive because, I was buying a lot of stuff at the time. I was really into the hobby. And then my dad, I'm going to blame him for Trotter Handcrafts.
Okay.
He's a woodworker, a fine woodworker. He has been his whole life. He's exceptionally good at fine woodworking. So, and he's had a lathe, when I was a kid, I used to see him on the lathe in the shop. And he actually taught me how to turn when I was, probably in elementary school. He'd throw a little block of wood on there and be like, here you go, guy, fire this thing up and see if you can make something. And he'd walk away and I'd make random little shapes on his lathe as a kid. Mm-hmm. But, I never really got into it too much. But in 2018, fast forward to 2018, so I'm already in the wet shaving hobby. He buys me this little mini jet lathe for Christmas one year in 2018. And at first I was like, thanks, Dad, but I have no idea what I'm going to do with this thing, I hate to have like a nice $500 tool, $600 tool just sitting in the garage collecting dust. But that's what it did for like a year. It sat in my garage for about a year, and I didn't. I hate to admit it, I didn't really touch it for about a year. Mm. And then it wasn't much longer after that COVID started, and I had a lot of time on my hands, like we all did. And so I was out in the shop just tinkering around with stuff. I put the lathe together, I put it on the bench, found like a random piece of wood, and I started turning little blocks of wood, And of course, since I was in the wet shaving hobby, it just kind of like made sense. Well, I should try to turn shaving brush. And so that's where it all started. Just out of boredom, like the pieces, everything just kind of fell into place. Yeah, I was initially just doing it as a very random hobby, making wooden shaving brushes for myself. I was on some of the shaving forums. So of course I was posting some of my shave of the day photos with these little dorky wooden handles. And a couple of my friends, I don't know if they were just being nice to me on the forums or if they were actually genuinely interested, said, oh, those are cool. Can you make me one? I'll pay for the wood, or I'll pay for the knot and the wood and shipping. So I was like, sure, you know, I don't mind. I'll just do it for free. So I started making them shaving brushes out of wood. Okay. Again, everything started out of wood. There was no resin for me at that point. And progressively, as I started making these little wood handles for myself, for my friends on the forum, they started posting their shave of the days, and I started getting better at it. It took a while. I mean, it wasn't an overnight thing by any means, but the handles started to really represent or look like shaving brushes after some time and effort. And more people just started reaching out, and they're like, hey, well, yeah, I saw this guy's photo on the forum. Could you make me one with this? And I had some people sending me blocks of wood that they harvested or had some sort of meaning to them. So yeah, that's initially how Trotter Handcraft started. And it didn't really even have a name at the time. It was just that guy, Paul, on the shaving forum can turn a wood handle for you. And all you really have to do is like pay $10 for the block of wood and not, So that was kind of my humble beginnings. And then when things started to really kind of take off, I thought, you know, I should transition from wood and try to do resin, because that's what I see other artisan brush makers doing. Wood is nice, but it also it's wood. It's not the best product for wet shaving, right? Because your hands are wet and soapy, you're submerging this thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can put a fairly waterproof finish on wood, but it's never necessarily 100%. So I thought, if I'm ever gonna like really try to make a run at brushes and being a brush maker of any sort, I need to branch out and get into resin. So yeah, I remember I went to Joanne Fabrics, or one of the local fabric stores that sells the little kits of resin. I mean, it's not even good resin, but they have it. And I mixed it up and I threw some dye and pigment in there. And I remember making my first few resin brushes. They weren't great, you know, because it was a different material type that I wasn't used to. I didn't understand how resin cured necessarily. I didn't understand the exothermic properties that happen with resin. I didn't understand, you know, proper mixing techniques or anything like that. But again, you know, I had the desire to learn. I really wanted to do well with it. I wanted to make some respectable looking resin brushes. So I stuck with it. And, you know, believe it or not, there's not that much info out there on the internet or YouTube. You think there would be for resin shave brushes and making brushes, but there's surprisingly little info out there, especially at that time, you know? Mm-hmm. So there was a lot of trial and error. It was me wasting a lot of resin. It was me fumbling around for quite a while until I figured out how it kind of came together and how it all worked. And then it was just like the wood brushes. They became better with every one I made. And it got to the point where, you know, I was giving those to people, giving those to friends. I started to casually sell them on the forums, not for very much money, because I didn't even think they were that great. But over time, I'd say at least a solid year or so, they were looking pretty good. So I opened an Etsy shop in 2021.
Okay.
And I started putting those handles in the Etsy shop. And at the time, I really didn't stock knots, as far as I remember, maybe just some $10 tuxedo synthetic knots. But I was mostly selling handles at the time, and they weren't much. They were like maybe $50 for a handle out of my Etsy shop at the time. And they did well. Like, you know, again, the more time I put into it, the better I got at it. They looked better with almost every brush. And then, you know, the Etsy shop would sell out pretty quick whenever I'd throw handles in there. And again, people saw them in Shave of the Days. So they were reaching out, asking me for direct orders or custom orders, things like that. And then the Instagram live shows, like BBS Live, Nate and Mel, they saw my stuff and bought some handles and brushes from me. And I know, John, you and Gerard both bought some some pretty early Trotter brushes or handles at least. Yep. And so, yeah, it just escalated from there. And then I feel like I kind of outgrew Etsy and needed to start my own website in 2022. Mm-hmm. And so I did that. And yeah, the rest is kind of history. You know, it's been a wild ride. I have a full-time job, like I was telling John earlier. So I get fairly limited time in the shop every day. Trotter Handcrafts is not my full-time job. It's something I might be able to spend an hour or two a day at.
Well, thanks for that's great to see all the different way that things lined up. Well, especially your father being, you know, like a gifted wood. What's the proper term? Woodworker.
Fine woodworker. Yeah.
Thank you. I didn't want to say the wrong thing.
Craftsman.
But craftsman. Yeah. Yeah. All those things, but I mean that's pretty cool. With there's that early exposure, and as a kid, you don't know when you're going to pick up these things again. The fact that it came back around at this point, in your life, that's amazing.
It definitely did come back around, and yeah, I feel like in a weird way, I've become my father too, because when I was younger and at an earlier age, I really had no interest in woodworking or working on a lathe. Or making things by hand necessarily, but here I am in my mid-40s working on a lathe every single day.
I was going to say the same thing that, you know, I always tell John when it comes to this stuff in this hobby, it's not drugs, and that's all that matters, right?
That's a fair point. It could be way worse.
It could have been anything else, you know, it could be much, much worse.
Absolutely.
Fair point.
One thing I found interesting, that I want to kind of dig a little deeper is you mentioned like on YouTube or just like out there how there's like not too many resources. It just got me thinking, like, is there much conversation, or is there a place that other brushmakers go to kind of share tips or techniques, or is it more like everyone's kind of on trade their own secrets. Journey, and you're right. And are there like trade secrets and kind of closely guarded, you know, techniques and whatnot?
I think there are secrets, and I think intentionally brushmakers kind of don't talk to one another a lot of the time. They're trying to protect their techniques, and we're all different. Mm-hmm. We all do things probably a little bit different. I mean, there's like the core functions of making a brush, and you know, the lathe is obviously the piece that we all use, and we use buffing wheels, and we probably use the same types of resin. There's two or three types of resin, but we probably use a lot of the same materials and dyes, but maybe our finishing techniques are different sometimes.
Okay.
I kind of wish that brush makers would talk together more, but that doesn't seem to happen, at least from my experience. So like I said, I had to learn almost everything trial and error on my own. I did have a couple of people that were pretty cool when I asked them questions early on. Andrew at Viking.
Okay.
He and I spoke a couple times really early on when I was making brushes, and he kind of gave me some tips. And of course, he didn't tell me he didn't give me a blueprint exactly. Do step A, then step B, add this. Yeah. He kind of pushed me in the right direction, or gave me some general advice on what to try, or maybe don't try that. And I think he was pretty helpful, at least for me, out of the gate. And I've tried to repay that forward. There's been a couple of brush makers in the last year or two who have reached out to me and said they enjoy my stuff. And I've tried to give them tips as well without giving them a full game plan book on how to replicate a Trotter brush.
Well, essentially giving away the shop, right? If you're like, well, this is how I make this shape. Like, oh, okay, great. Tell me more.
Yep. Yeah, I think a lot of that centers around the pores too. So like, we all probably have slightly different pore techniques. We probably all slightly use different pigments and dyes to some degree. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we don't want to necessarily give away exactly how we do it, because we don't want to see some other brush maker straight up replicate your stuff to a T, whether it's the pour, whether it's the shape. Knots are a whole nother thing. You know, it's everybody has their own special knots that they source themselves, or maybe in some cases tie themselves. So
I know, like, some of the other, like, brush makers that we've, you know, spoken with, like, they used to have like a little group, you know, where they would talk about stuff. What's his name? Brush guy, Marting, Matthew Marting.
Yeah.
Right.
Don't know him.
Yeah. So he's one of the older ones. He's kind of, he's pretty much like, I think he basically said he's done everything, like, you know, like he basically paid off everything that he's done and stuff like that. So he's kind of out, but, he did, if you look up like brush guy, shaving brushes, stuff like that, he has a unique shape. He has a, West Coast Shaving did some collabs with him and stuff like that.
Yeah.
As well. But, I know like a few people used to, because he was like very early on in terms of the artisan shape brushes. And so he would offer like tips on mixing resins and stuff like that. And so I know, I just know for a fact, you know, like Scott from Declaration, like he had some, he got some input from Matt, like Matt was really good. And then like anything good that happens, there's like bound to be some falling out or something, this and that. And I know, but
unfortunately, yes.
And then you see some of the guys that, you know, aren't necessarily shave people, but they are like resin people, or they mix with hybrids, like Strange Donkey comes to mind.
Yeah.
Some of the others, you know, I think Chaotic, there's like, I'm thinking of some of the other Instagram guys where it's just like, how do you just come up with this, or how does this like work? And I'm just like, nope. Like, not, don't want to think about it.
Yeah. It's a skill that they have.
How does this not turn into mud, you know?
Right.
Everything's brown.
Yeah.
With like various shades of brown. Like, okay, all right.
If you're looking for a cool place to hang out with traditional shaving enthusiasts, come on down to the Lather Talk Discord. Share your shave of the days, mail calls, or talk about your favorite hardware or software, and just about everything in between. Once again, that's Lather Talk Discord. Check out the link below.
Life. All right, let's say you weren't able to make brushes yourself anymore, and you had to choose, like, for any other shaving brush needs you need, you had to choose one other brush maker. Who would you buy from? Who would you choose?
Dude, he already talked about it. He said the brush, the Badger boar brush, that he got with Parasso.
That $10 boar brush is what I would choose, obviously.
Clearly, come on, John. Not with the knowledge you have now.
I like boar brushes. I don't care if they're cheap or not.
I like boar brushes too. There's nothing wrong with that. Which that could be your answer. You go back to the first boar brush. I somehow don't think that would be the answer, but
no, that's not the answer. It would obviously be, you know, an artisan brush maker that I respect, that I have a lot of his stuff. That's Prometheus Handcrafts.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, Levi, I believe is his name. He does different stuff. He does kind of unique pours. I bought a lot of his stuff when he was selling on Etsy. I'm not sure if he still is, but yeah, I was really into his work there for a while when he was making stuff. So
I think he's also a woodworker, like by trade. Yeah. He's a woodworker by trade.
He is, yeah. But there's a lot of talented brush makers, artisan brush makers, and I have a collection of probably 50 artisan brushes that aren't mine that I enjoy. But
nice. I feel like Prometheus. Yeah, I'm not sure because I did have a brush or two from them in the past, whether they're active or not. But I feel like it's been a while. It's been a while. Okay, because I haven't heard them talked about in a bit. But fantastic work. So
I checked them like maybe within the past couple of months just to see you know what's going on. But yeah, I want to say the last thing I saw them post was maybe something last year, early last year or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
that sounds right. But yeah, he did really cool stuff, and
yeah,
like I said, I probably half dozen of his brushes, and yeah, I really enjoy those.
Okay,
shout out to Prometheus.
Yeah. If you guys ever find their brushes on like the BST or secondhand, definitely worth taking a look at. Let's pivot to a question from the Lather Talk Discord. And this comes from IDKWID, which is I don't know what I'm doing, Craig.
Yes.
He had a question about, and I'm not too sure when this might have started, but about the laser etching on your brush coins. Is that like a new development? Are those already in place or in progress? Can you share a little bit more about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I've been using a brass coin in my brushes for the last few years. And I won't go into the details, but some of the, you know, a brass coin, it's like a brass razor. If you neglect it, if you don't take care of it, brass can wear, it can patina, it can look ugly after some time without proper care. So, you know, I started seeing some shave of the day photos with the brass coins that were neglected, and they didn't look great to me. And I started thinking about, well, how could I do better on the coin front? And I had this idea, like, what if I could get really nice stainless steel coins? Like, that's something you don't see in artisan brushes, at least to my knowledge. You mostly see brass coins, you know, and they're easy to get into cost wise. There's a lot of companies that make brass maker coins, but I wanted to explore stainless steel. So I started looking around, and what I found is there are companies that make stainless steel coins, but they're extremely expensive. So then I had this random idea. Well, what if I found some stainless steel blanks and I engraved them myself? So I started checking into that, and that seemed like a way more realistic option. And so I ordered stainless steel round blanks from a few companies, and I got samples in. Two of the companies were, the blanks were really not that great. And the third one that came in was perfect. Perfectly laser cut, had a really nice satin brushed finish on it. It was good quality stainless. It's a US company. And so I was like, yeah, this looks awesome. So I found the product. I just needed to find a way to laser engrave it. And so I bought myself a laser engraver, not knowing if it would even work. Which was kind of a bold move on my part. I was like, this is either going to be an epic fail or it's going to work out
really well. Bold move, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off.
So I got these blanks, and I stuck them in the laser engraver, and I threw my logo on there, and yeah, they came out. They worked.
It worked.
So awesome. Okay.
It wasn't a colossal waste of money and time.
I remember, I think I saw one of your posts, you know, like about it, and I'm just like, no, like these are super clean.
Yeah, they're sharp. They look really sharp in person. Yeah, like I said, the coin itself is exactly perfect. I mean, there's no weirdness to the coin at all. It looks better than I ever could have expected. The laser engraving, there was a little bit of a learning curve with the laser engraver right out of the gate. I had to kind of learn the software on the laser engraver. I had to learn what settings to feed into the machine. But yeah, it's dialed in now. And so for 2024, I kind of made the switch. I stopped doing brass coins at the end of 23. I made the switch to stainless steel laser engraved in 2024. And I just think it's going to be a good positive change. It looks like, to me, it looks like a higher quality coin. There you go.
That's one of them.
I saw the other. There was another logo, right?
There is. There's the horseman logo.
Here it is. It's Bojack.
You can scroll.
I mean, it's a character who bears no resemblance to
Bojack Horseman.
Yeah, that's right.
Trotman Jackman.
Yes. Cartoon Horseman.
So,
there you go.
That looks really good.
You have two options for Trotter coins now. Well, or if you order a brush from me directly and you don't want a coin, we could do that too.
Why would you do that now that you know the story of the big gamble that paid off?
People do order them without coins from time to time.
Okay, well, those people are wrong. So moving on.
I'd agree. I'll agree with that.
Sweet.
I wonder who made this brush in this very, very unique shape that is so common.
I think I heard Nate from BBS Live saying he wanted to order this pour in particular. Is that, or does he have one already? Evil Candy Corn is the name of it.
Yeah, I sent him one today. So
he's
got one now.
Got it. Oh, it's so funny that we're looking at it. Very nice. Very it is Halloween-y, but I feel like that didn't sound right. It looks very of Halloween, but I feel like it's also fine, like independent of that holiday.
Well, yeah, you know, Halloween's my favorite holiday, and I did a handful of Halloween brushes this last year. So there's also Bats in the Butterscotch, which is kind of like a dark take on butterscotch. It's got, you know, your typical traditional butterscotch orange, and then it's got some like dark, mysterious black swirls in there and some silver and some silver glitter. So
favorite Halloween movie.
My favorite Halloween movie. I don't know. I'm kind of like into the old 80s Halloween and horror movies and slasher flicks from the 80s. When I was a kid, we weren't allowed to watch them, so I had to go to the neighbor's house, of course, and watch them with those kids.
You should do could do like a Freddy the Krueger series or like a Crystal Lake. That was Friday the 13th, right? Freddy Krueger.
You said Freddy the Krueger.
No, Friday the 13th.
I think you combined.
Was
them.
I doing? But was I thinking both? Probably.
I think so. I mean, Friday the 13th. You know, people add the to at random times.
That's my rap. That's my street name.
Right. There's all Megan the Stallion. And then
Freddy the Krueger.
The Krueger. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
No,
yeah.
Freddy Duh Krueger. D A.
Oh, Freddy Duh Krueger. Okay. Yeah. Yes. There we go. You heard him say that, right, Paul? It wasn't just me.
I did. Right. Sorry, Gerard.
My bad. Whatever.
You can edit that out later.
No, you can.
No. Oh, no. This is all staying.
That's the stuff that. Any misspeak, you know, from me? Oh, absolutely. It's staying in.
Honestly, it's just really natural. So I'm like, I like that. I that's why I call it out, not to bash you, but like that sounds pretty good. And it's because it sounds like a rapper name now. Yes.
Freddy the Krueger.
Freddy the Krueger. Yeah.
Okay. I like it.
All right. So we learned that Halloween's your favorite holiday. So you couldn't really limit it to any one franchise of movies from the 80s. I mean, I totally agree. Like, there's some classic, you know, classic options from that era. Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
I know. I like all those. Yeah.
Evil Dead.
So good.
All of them.
Okay. Can't I'm like your children. You can't choose a favorite.
We'll think of something to for this year.
That's cool. Well, I'll definitely, yeah, like I'll look harder when Halloween's rolling around, because then I know you have like some extra incentive.
The extra stuff.
It was funny as
Ghostbusters Slimer.
Oh,
Ghostbusters. Slimer pour.
Yeah, okay. There you go. Slimer Ghostbusters.
Guys, you remember Ecto Cooler?
Yes.
I do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Next year, remind me so I don't forget.
So Ecto Cooler. Actually,
like a Slimer. Oh, Slimer Bush. Mm.
So do you remember Ghostbusters 2 with the painting Ego?
Oh yeah.
Right. And I remember at the end, I don't know why this is coming to mind, but like they basically go through the old, like, I think it's a subway system in New York. And then that's where like, he's like, you know, his power is like, you know, coming, and there's like a slime river, you know, through one of the old subways.
Pink slime.
It was like a pink slime. Yeah.
Right. It was a pink slime. Yeah. Yeah.
That could be a resin pour.
Well, think about this. What if I didn't let the resin cure and I just like mail out
just a bunch
slimy,
of
a slimy, gooey brush. Here's your Slimer pour.
Yeah.
And someone's using it. It's just like resin.
The knots like sticking out.
Yeah, someone's just going to be like,
don't be like that Paul Trotter guy. He nailed that Slimer pour.
I'm telling you.
He is thinking outside the box.
That's next level right there.
Yeah, throwing the gauntlet down to other brush makers.
We have had worse ideas on this podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Just
yeah.
talking out of thin air. This is not bad.
Yeah. No, we're on to something here.
I'm into this.
Ecto cooler for sure. I think Ecto cooler. Yeah. And I feel if like anyone does it beforehand, they stole it. We're just gonna call it right now.
I feel like I should be taking notes because we're coming up with some gems here, you know?
Okay. Yep. It's okay. You can have that first one's free.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's put a pin in all our crazy Halloween brush ideas that we're having in the beginning of February.
In February.
Hey, you can't stifle creativeness, but
no, you can't. No, you gotta be thinking ahead all the time, you know.
Yeah. Planning.
Okay, fine. Yeah. We'll mix the two. My Bloody Valentine coming. You know, the Valentine's Day Massacre.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think I've ever done a Valentine's brush, to be honest. Yeah. So I better start thinking about that. Yeah.
You know,
some black and red. Maybe some pink. You've done. I've seen some pink pours from you, so that's not right. That's nothing new.
Nope. I do a lot of pink brushes. Believe it or not, yeah. People ask for it, and
yeah.
I
dig a good pink brush. Yeah,
I do too. I like it.
We are not color supremacists either.
Good.
You know, either. We're not even a medium supremacist. Whether it's wood, resin, petrified, fossilized dinosaur. Crap.
That'd be fun to turn or at least try.
The smell though. The smell was I'd worry about you.
No, it's petrified. It's fine.
Earlier, Paul, we were talking about just other hobbies you had. Clearly, you know, wood shaving enthusiast that went on to be a brush maker as well. We talked about guitars. What are some other hobbies that kind of that are currently active or kind of took a big chunk of your brain space and time in the past?
I've been into motorcycles for most of my adult life, so I don't find much free time to ride anymore. I mean, I do ride to work. I have about a half an hour commute each way to work every day, so in the summertime or when the weather is nice and it's not raining here in Western Washington, I'll take my motorcycle out. And,
okay.
So yeah, I guess, you know, between guitars and motorcycles and shaving brushes,
that's pretty good.
There's
not much. Okay.
Yeah. Not many seconds left in the day.
There's really not. I was telling John that earlier. I have just like a small window of time every single evening where I can sneak out to the shop and try to do something that I enjoy, and that's it.
I don't know. I kind of want to say like, those are some very like classic, like masculine hobbies, but I don't want to limit it to, you know, like, those hobbies are only for guys, but they are very like, there's something like vintage about it with the motorcycles, with the guitars, like there's that appeal to it. So,
and then there's the pink brushes that also somehow fit into,
which we love too. Yeah. Cause we're not, exactly.
Motorcycle colorway themed brushes.
Oh, I've thought about that before. Yeah.
There we go.
Haven't done it, but it has crossed my mind on more than one occasion.
Has the guitar hobby, like there's some classic color combinations. Has that bled into your brush pours?
Yeah, actually there has. So if you're familiar with Fender's Candy Apple Red, which is like, you know, a really deep red with metallic gold flake, I've tried to recreate that in one of my pours called Retro Red Sparkle. So that's one guitar inspired pour.
Okay.
Made quite a few of those over the last couple of years. People seem to like that one a lot. Seems like there's been a couple others that are somewhat guitar related. There's Butterscotch Fender guitars, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
So, but that doesn't necessarily line up with like your shaving brush Butterscotch. So when I
that's true.
We should probably also talk about Butterscotch because
yes, let's talk about Butterscotch.
When I started pouring resin, obviously, you know, Butterscotch is one of the most popular resin pours out there in the wet shaving world. But I wanted to like do something a little different with Butterscotch. I didn't want to do a straight up orange butterscotch pour. I wanted to do something that was like butterscotch, but kind of went in a different direction, or just had my own twist on it that was unique and not like everybody else's. So I came up with this pour called Fawn that I do, F-A-W-N. It's a yellowy butterscotch. It's like an off yellow butterscotch. Yeah, I don't even know if you could say it really. It's sort of hints at orange, and it sort of hints at yellow, but it's not necessarily either. So
your color description is excellent for our audio listeners, because I think you're doing such a good job to describe it. Audio listeners, I'm also showing this color pour. That's really cool.
That version. Go up a little bit. Because I'm also looking. I have another screen where I'm looking too. So
okay,
go scroll up a little bit. There should be one that's more glossy.
The beauty of the. I saw the retro red too, Paul. The retro red looks fantastic as well. Oh my gosh.
Thank you. So yeah, that's fun. That's kind of my weird take on butterscotch.
It's not just a solid opaque color.
There's kind of beige spots if you look really closely.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I can see that. It gives some depth and texture to it. Instead of just being a flat color. It almost reminds me a little bit of like mustard, but not. Do you know what I mean? Like something about it reminds me of a faded mustard.
Like a bright mustard, not your spicy brown mustards.
Not spicy brown. Yeah,
we're not talking. You know, a very nice champagne mustard, like a nice. You know,
ooh, that's a good word. Yeah.
It's more like Grey Poupon, right?
Yeah. The Dijon.
Yeah. There you go. Dijon. It's like a Dijon.
Dijon. Yes.
I wish I had a dime for every time somebody told me it looks like mustard. Because
you know.
I'd have like.
Oh, do a lot of people?
I'd have a dollar. Yeah, I've heard the mustard thing.
Okay. Oh, dang it! I thought I had an original. I just want to share the can. There might be another retro red. Is that coming through?
It is.
Yeah, that's probably not the best example.
There we go.
There you go. Not yet. Hey, you're the one who made this real.
Those two brushes were made as a joke. I have to throw that out right now.
Okay, wait, hold on. We can
mini,
cut that out.
The micro.
Here we go.
Please, for the love of God, click on that one instead. So yeah, that's retro red. It's Fender Candy Apple Red.
Look at that. Okay.
The Fender the factory is actually like not too far from where I am.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah, the Fender factory is in Corona, California.
Corona. Yeah. Corona.
Right? It's like 15 minutes. Yeah. Many times gone over there.
Oh, nice.
There's nothing else in Corona. I would never come down here.
just the Fender.
Just the Fender guitar factory.
And it's horrendous to drive there if you're coming from LA. No, just don't do it.
Okay. But looking at the year ahead, Paul, what are some of the things that we might look forward to? I don't know if the coins that you've laser etched yourself, that's a great addition. Other things like that you could share, or even just like other ways you might want to change or improve your current process?
Stand out 24.
Probably new shapes. You know, right now I offer three or four shapes on a regular basis. I want to probably expand that out to a couple more this year. Okay. I've got some ideas, some somewhat unique shapes, ideas that I think are interesting. I don't know if other people will think they're interesting, but the crazy thing about shapes is, you know, you want to come up with your own, obviously, and you want to come up with something that's comfortable in the hand, which is, again, tricky to do always. So yeah, I've come up with a couple prototypes that I would like to finalize and push out there and have as an option. Mm-hmm. On a regular basis for the coming year.
Okay, I'm sure that can be tricky. Just given, like, does it right? I'm sure you're double checking. Like, oh, does this look like something that's already on the market? And
yeah,
I think what comes into play too, what we're talking about before, kind of how protective brush makers can be about certain pores, certain shapes. So
it's very personal. You know, it's, I think sometimes we kind of bump into each other on certain aspects of brush making and shapes, but it's also pretty clear when somebody's straight up ripping off your shape, and that's not cool. So to try to come up with something that's completely unique that you can call yours, like with my Canon shape, I wanted to come up with something that when somebody saw it in a shave of the day photo, like they would see that and go, that's a Trotter Canon shape, you know, even without seeing the coin, even without seeing any. Yeah. They wanted to see,
the hoss of a handle.
It is. It's big. It's bulky. It's bold. It doesn't look like anything else out there.
Yeah.
It's big, bold, and beautiful.
It's polarizing. Some people might be like, that's ridiculously large. And
you're not the first person. Hashtag that's what she said.
Yeah.
Sorry.
It's okay. Well, if anything, for those with big hands out there, Paul's Canon shape is probably perfect for you then.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, all three of my brushes, my brush shapes that I currently offer, three or four, they're all on the bigger side. I don't really make small handles. That's by design. So yeah, if you have freakishly small hands, you might not want a Trotter brush.
Good to know.
They work great for my hands.
But. No baby hands. Nah. Otherwise you're gonna have a bad time with Paul's brushes.
Mm-hmm. And there's been people who have contacted me and been like, I love your shapes. I want to try your T1 Manchurian knot, but I just need a smaller brush. Can you do that? And I can tone it down. I can scale any of my shapes down for people with smaller hands if that's what they prefer. You know, if they're serious about wanting a Trotter brush and having a smaller form factor, I can do that. Like those two that you accidentally showed John that were made for Sloppy Badger.
Yeah.
That were a joke. But those are
the fact that we just showed those, there's gonna be people out there that be like, that's it. That's what I want.
They're already
having the mini brush. Yeah.
So we made those mini brushes as a joke for John. And I posted the video just thinking, like, first of all, I can't believe I'm even posting this video because it looks so ridiculous. But sure enough, like a couple people reached out. Oh, hey, can you make me a mini brush? I was like, oh great, this is gonna become a thing now.
What's like a small Canon? What's like the
mini Canon?
There's been a swivel gun. I think that's the official.
I don't know.
I don't know, but there was a mini Canon that was made too, and that went to Austin at AA Shaving.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
That's great.
So he owns a mini Canon. John owns a mini Canon.
The Svelte Canon. The Canon.
What size knot went in that, like a 22? Or
a full size knot. It was a 26 millimeter knot. Yeah.
But it was just,
the knot was like as big as the handle. It was completely ridiculous.
It's, I mean, it almost takes on like, you know, like the chubby, like shape, which is classic. Like it kind of, right, it goes into that territory a little bit.
It does, but it's even smaller. And
the stump cannon.
Stumpy.
The stump shot.
Just stump. I like that. Yeah.
Well, I think we've gotten to through kind of like what I had on our outline for today. So I just want to say thank you, Paul, so much for coming on to the podcast. It's a pleasure.
Of course.
We could talk about more random things, but I do want to respect everyone's time.
We don't respect yours. You're on the East Coast, so it's only 7:50 right now. But
us West Coasters, we're just starting our evening here. So.
Oh yeah. Well, I figure, I don't know. Like maybe you guys need to eat dinner, or heaven forbid you have plans or something. Paul, can you share with our viewers and listeners? Again, where can they find your fine brushes?
So Trotter Handcrafts is my website, trotterhandcrafts.com. The Shave Supply is my retailer in Southern California, and Shave Supply typically, you know, I send them a batch of brushes every month or two.
Gareth's
okay. So Gareth is a really good guy. He has a nice shop, brick and mortar, and he also does internet sales too. So check out shapesupply.com, either one of those places. You can pick up a Trouter brush. I do direct orders, so if you don't see, you know, something in stock, you can just contact me directly and say, hey, I saw that color pour and I like this shape and I want this knot, and I'm happy to make it for you too. So
ask for mini brushes. just to stick it to.
They're not half the cost, I'll tell you that.
Oh, okay, so there you go. Now, for those of you looking for a way to save money, that's not the way to go.
They might be 3/4 of the cost, but they're not half.
No, you just make them the full cost. It's the time. It's the labor.
Yes, yes. Yes.
Don't even feel right about that, but yeah.
You know, if it takes the same amount of time to make that, you know, to make that brush, then that's what you do. If not, then you lie to us and you still charge the same thing anyway.
I like how you think, Gerard.
Economics. Okay.
You've talked me right into it.
This is capitalism. That's your next brush handle shape. Capitalism.
Tiny brushes at full cost. You know? That's what's coming in 2024. Be ready.
There we go.
All right. There you go. There you go. You heard it here. Thank you so much again, Paul, for your time, for coming on to the show. Gerard, as always, pleasure. Thank you as well. And thank you, listeners and viewers. Thanks for tuning in today. Again, go check out Paul, his website, at Shave Supply. Follow him on Instagram. For those watching the video version, you saw we went through his page. You can see a lot of the fine work that's gone out there. That he's done all the options. So great work. Again, congratulations on winning Best Brushmaker for this year's Ladder Talk Awards. Well deserved, my friend. So
well, thank you.
Yeah. Well, I hope everyone has a good morning, good afternoon, good night, whenever you're listening to this. And we'll catch you in the next episode. Take care.
Thank you, guys.